We are holding on the fifth line of line Beis Amud Aleph. We were in the middle of discussing. We said yesterday that Shmuel had said a din about seals on things attached to the ground, like for example a seal or a lock or whatever on the cover of a well, versus seals on kalim, where he said that ones on things attached to the ground, you can untie the knot but nothing else. You can't untwist the rope and you can't cut it, because that would be soiser, because those would be malachos of destroying, because it's something attached to the ground. Whereas in kalim you can. And then we said on Yom Tov, either way, you're allowed to do whatever you want. Actually, let me rephrase that. What he said was the same rules apply to Shabbos and to Yom Tov, Shmuel said. Sorry, I was mixing it up with another one of the opinions. Shmuel himself said the Yom Tov and Shabbos are the same thing in this regard. Things attached to the ground, you can only untie them. Things attached to kalim, you can also untwist the rope and or cut the rope. That was yesterday. Now, so we mentioned we went through to figure out to find a Tano who agrees with that, because we had several different opinions, and we wound up finding a Braisa that says exactly the first half of the Braisa said exactly that, but it said ones attached to the ground, you can untie. Oh, on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, but nothing else, not on twist and not cut. But then it said something different than what Shmuel said, that on one a keli, there's also a difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos, that on Shabbos, you're also only allowed to untie it, and on Yom Tov, you're allowed to do anything. So we said the first part of it agrees with what Shmuel says. And that's how we have a basis for what Shmuel was saying based on that braisa. So that's where we're holding.
Untie, Shmuel said, you cannot on Shabbos.
No, Shmuel said, untie you can do on Shabbos even if it's attached to the ground. So he said it's not, cut it, you can't. So that's the thing. Shmuel had said that if it's attached to the ground, you can't cut it, but if it's attached to a keli, you can cut it even on Shabbos, and certainly on Yom Tov. Shmuel had said. But then the Braisa says that when it's attached to the ground, you can't cut it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. But if it's a keli, you can't cut it on Shabbos, but you can cut it on Yom Tov. So Shmuel is saying you're allowed to cut it if it's on a keli, even on Shabbos, and the Braisa is saying you can't. So Tarat Zalachoresha, so you've explained the first part of what Shmuel said. You found a basis for it in the Braisa. El Sefer Kasha, but what are you going to do with the second part of it? Shmuel said that on Shabbos you're allowed to cut the rope, and the Braisa is saying that on Shabbos you can't. The answer is Hamani Rav Nechemihi. That part of the Braisa is according to Rav Nechemia. That part of the Braisa, we were discussing until now, the reason why you can't cut or untwist or whatever would be because of issues of you're doing a malacha, or you're doing something similar to a malacha. But here the Gemara is going to say no. The reason why the Braisa is saying that you can't cut them on Shabbos is for a different reason. Nothing to do with malachas, but rather to do with mukta. Namely, it's according to Rav Nechemia. Well, wait. Da'amar, Rav Nechemia says, Kol ha-kelim ein nitolan el ha-derech tashvishan. Any keli can only be moved on Shabbos for its normal use. Meaning, we learned this in Shabbos, actually, that, for example, a knife, for example, it's meant to cut food. The Chachamim hold, and this is the halacha, once you're allowed to move a knife in order to cut food, you're allowed to move it for other purposes as well. For example, to cut a rope when you're allowed to cut a rope on Shabbos, for example, when it's attached to a keli, then you're even allowed to use a knife for that purpose. Rav Nechemia is saying no. A knife or any keli, you can only move on Shabbos for its usual purpose. So therefore, no, you cannot move a knife on Shabbos in order to cut the rope. That's what we're saying. That's why the Braisa is saying you can't cut the rope on Shabbos, not because it would be a malacha of cutting, or soiser, or anything like that, but because it would be a matter of mukta. And so Shmuel obviously doesn't have to hold of that. Then the question is, Irem Nechemia, well, if that goes according to Irem Nechemia, my Iri is Shabbos, then why do we have to specifically mention Shabbos? After the Yom Tov Nami, then the same din would apply to Yom Tov also. Irem Nechemia holds of, presumably Irem Nechemia holds the same rules of Mukta as far as Shabbos and as far as Yom Tov. You might answer, maybe not. Maybe Irem Nechemia does say there's a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov in that regard. But, But does he in fact make a distinction? We know, we can prove from a series of brises that Reb Nechemiah does not hold there's a difference in Hilchos Mukta between Shabbos and Yom Tov. If he says that you're not allowed to move a knife on Shabbos only for the purpose of cutting food, he says the same thing on Yom Tov. Why? We have a series of brises. We have one brisa that says Masikin b'kelim, that you're allowed to use kelim for firewood, wooden kelim, for firewood on Yom Tov. We're going to prove indirectly from these brises what Reb Nechemiah holds. Wait, because we have two different brises that talk about using kelim for something other than their intended purpose. Namely, neither one explicitly says Reb Yehuda. Neither one says actually we have three brises. None of them explicitly say any opinions, but we're going to understand from what each brisa says which one it's according to. Because again, let's review. We have three different Tanoim who have different opinions as far as Mukta. We have Rav Shimon, who is the most makel of all. We have Rav Yehuda, who holds a general category. We're talking, but he still holds a certain kind of Mukta, but he's the most lenient among the major opinions. Then you have Rav Yehuda, who holds a general concept of Mukta, but he still agrees that things that are not mukta, such as a knife, you're allowed to move for any permissible purpose. And then we have Reb Nechemiah that says that even a knife, you're only allowed to move for its usual purpose. So we have three brises that say as follows. One says, Masikin b'kelim, you're allowed to use kelim for firewood on Yom Tov. Then Masikin b'shivin kelim, you're not allowed to use broken kelim. Meaning, if they broke on Yom Tov. So if they, it means to make a fire. Yeah. So you're allowed to use kelim for that purpose because they're not mukta. You're allowed to move them for some other purpose, so therefore you're also allowed to move them in order to throw in the fire. But you're not allowed to use shivrei kelim because they broke on Yom Tov, and that means that at the beginning of Yom Tov you didn't intend them for firewood. The idea is that now they're not, you can't move them for anything. They become mukta at that point because they're not usable for anything else. Then we have a second braisa that says masikin ben b'kelim ben b'shiv b'kelim. You can use kelim for firewood. You can use broken kelim, presumably because there's no issue of mukta. And then we have a third braisa that says ein masikin loy b'kelim v'loy b'shiv b'kelim, that you cannot use whole kelim and you cannot use broken kelim. So how does it work? How do these three braises fit together? Omashani, and we answer like Kasha Harab Yehuda Harab Shimon Harab Nechemiah. The first braisa is according to Yehuda. He holds of mukta, so therefore he says whole kelim fine are not mukta. Once you're allowed to move them for their regular purpose, like to eat off them, you're also allowed to move them in order to throw them in the fire. Because right now they're mukta, because they're broken, you can't use them for their original purpose, and he holds mukta, and they weren't usable, you didn't plan to use them for firewood before Yom Tov. The second one, which says you can use shivrei kelim, would be according to Reb Shimon, who doesn't hold a mukta. And the third one that says that you can't even use kelim would have to be according to Reb Nechemiah. Why? Because he says, again, you can only move a keli for its normal purpose. The normal purpose of a keli is to eat off it or whatever, not to throw into the fire. So therefore, we see that now obviously this is talking about Yom Tov because that's the only time we're dealing with firewood. And we see Reb Nechemiah says it's also. So we see that the same thing Reb Nechemiah says as far as Shabbos, that you can't move a knife except for its regular purpose, also applies to Yom Tov. So we're back to the question then that we're back to the question, why would this braisa, the last braisa that we quoted about the untying and untwisting and whatever, why would it be distinguishing between Shabbos and Yom Tov? You want to tell me it's according to Reb Nechemiah? Reb Nechemiah says the same thing, applies to Yom Tov as well.
The answer is,
Reb Nechemiah. There are in fact two Tanoim who disagree within what Reb Nechemiah says. Within what Reb Nechemiah is saying, that you're only allowed to move a keli for its regular purpose, you have one Tana who says the same thing applies to Yom Tov as well. That's the Tana of this last braisa over here. And then you have a different one who says that Reb Nechemiah himself only says about Shabbos, not on Yom Tov, and that's the one about the untying. So the bottom line is that braisa doesn't contradict Shmuel because it goes according to Reb Nechemiah, and Shmuel doesn't have to hold according to Reb Nechemiah. He could hold according to Reb Yehuda or according to the Rabbanan. Shmuel and Amara, so he can't argue with Tanoim, but he can pick a Tana to go according to. Not used to necessarily, maybe, but they could.
They could rely on one.
Once you have, because the idea is like this. I once saw an interesting explanation. The reason why Amoraim don't argue with Tanoim is because you never know, whether this is actually based on an interesting expression in Yerushalmi, you never know when the Tanoim said something whether it might in fact be a halacha l'moshe misinai, something that you can't argue with. No, because if you have something that it says in the Mishnah, you never know whether it might be a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, and therefore you can't argue with it. But once you find that Tanoim are arguing on something, obviously it's not halacha l'moshe m'sinai, because if it was, they wouldn't be arguing. Therefore, an Amora has the right, therefore, to pick one side or the other. I mean, there are rules. You know, sometimes we have rules. You know, when you have a machloikus between this and that Tana, the halacha is like this one. In that case, then they don't really have a choice, because the halacha has been established that way. But where the halacha had not been definitively established yet, then they can pick they can pick sides. And for that reason, actually, we sometimes even find in the Gemara that you'll have an Amora will say something which is partly according to one Tana and partly according to a different Tana. Because again, given that there's a machloikus over here, they're not only allowed to pick sides, but they're allowed to pick sides within the different details. They don't have to consistently go according to one Tana, because in that case, it's obviously not halacha l'moshe m'sinai yet. Mishnah says, "Ein poichas nesaner." You're not allowed to open up a lamp on Yom Tov. So there's a few different explanations what this means. Rashi says is that we're talking about an earthenware lamp. The typical way you make anything out of earthenware is you make a lump of clay. In Hebrew it's called beitzim shel yotzer. You take the lump and then you shape it into whatever shape you want, and then you fire it. Here Rashi describes. So the normal way you would do it. The normal way is you'd start shaping it by hand, and then you put it on a potter's wheel or whatever. Here, what you might want to do, Rashi describes, is you take one of these lumps and you punch your fist into it, and that makes a makeshift hole, which now you can use it as a lamp. Yeah. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos has a completely different explanation, because Tosfos says if that's the case, of course you can't do that. What kind of the Mishnah says, "Replace your oath to clean," because you're making a keli. Well, obviously you're making a keli, and Tosfos argues with it on other grounds, also based on the Gemara. So therefore, Tosfos has a different explanation. After you've shaped the shape of the lamp, before you fire it, what you do is when you're going to put it into the oven, you don't want the walls to collapse into it. So what you do is you put some straw or whatever inside the middle of it, inside the cavity of it, to stuff it as stuffing to hold it open. And later on, you take that out. And so what you do is actually, once you start firing it, it starts drying out in the oven a little. It gets to the point where it will hold together nicely. Then you take out the straw. Then you finish firing it. The in person, it's an error. Var Mishnah means that middle part where you're taking out the straw. So it's not completely fired yet, but at that, yeah. But it's still the same idea, because then you're finishing off the keli, kind of. Because at that point, theoretically, you could use it, even though it hasn't been completely fired yet. And then the third explanation, the Rambam's explanation, is that sometimes what they do is they make kelim in pairs. Sometimes what they do is they cast, like in this case, two lamps together in pairs, either one next to each other or one on top of the other, like this, and then afterwards they cut them apart. The Rambam says that's what we mean here by in person as a ner. It would be to cut them apart. Basically, because you're making a keli. And those are the three different
things. Put a cavity when they cut together.
Because what they would do is they probably make a hollow bowl in the first place, like it wouldn't be completely sealed, and then they'd make it like half, and then they'd make another half or whatever. I don't know.
They spin it.
So either way, your point at these explanations, the point is you're making a keli by doing that. The enos and pechem in Yom Tov, you're also not allowed to make charcoal on Yom Tov. So Rashi says that's also making a keli. Charcoal is ordinarily used by goldsmiths. Or other precious metal smiths, because they need something that'll burn at a high temperature, and charcoal does that. So again, it's considered for their purposes. It's considered like a keli. The ein chaytzchen es apsila, and you're also not allowed to cut a wick short. You need a wick of a certain size. You can't cut it for the same reason. You're making it into a useful keli. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a chaytzcha ba'ur. Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to cut it using fire, not with a scissors, but with fire. And we'll talk about in the Gemara what that means. What? No, he's talking about the wick. The wick, yeah. So the Gemara asks, Man Tana b'chisas ne'amana, which Tana do we see who says that just opening up the lamp before you even fire it in the oven is already considered a keli? Again, according to all these various explanations, according to Rashi that you just punch a hole in the lump of clay, who says that that's already a keli? Maybe it's only a keli after it's fired in the oven. And according to Tosfos' explanation, similarly, that it's only partly fired, whatever. Amar Rabbi Yosef Rameir. So Rabbi Yosef says that would be according to Rameir. The Tanya, as we learn in Abraisa, Klai Cheres, in the MSI Mekabel Tuma, at what point in the manufacturing process does an earthenware utensil, is it Mekabel Tuma? Mishin Nigmar Malachta, once the work on it is finished, meaning once it's been carved out, Dibir Rameir, Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a Mishin Tzalko B'Kibshin. Rabbi Yeshua says only once it's been fired in the oven. So according to Rabbi Yeshua, than making let's go with Rashi to keep things simple. Just making a hole, just punching a hole in the lump of clay there is not enough to be considered a keli yet until it's fire. Yeah. Amalei Abaye, Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, Mimai, who says that's the right explanation? Duma ad kan le'kamer Rav Meir Hossam. Maybe Rav Meir is saying over there, you know why Rav Meir is saying that a regular kli cheres, like we're talking about, let's say a bowl, for example, why it's considered gemar malacha even before it's been fired? Ela dechazu lekabuli be'midi, because you can use it to put something inside it. You can't. Rashi says, granted, you can't use it to put in liquids because the liquids will dissolve the clay, the wet clay, because it hasn't been fired yet. But you could always use it as a bowl for apples or something for the time being. Dilma Adkan, like Amar Meir, Hossam, maybe, why does your mayor say over there that it's Makabal Truma once the shape has been made, before it's been fired? Ela Dechazel Kabuli Be Midi, because you can use it to hold something. Not solids, not liquids, but solids. Aval Hachal Amay Chazi, but over here, a lamp is a tiny little thing. What are you going to put inside it before it's fired? Again, you can't say, for example, I can use it as a makeshift cup, because if you use it as a makeshift cup, it'll fall apart from the liquid. The liquid will dissolve the clay. A lamp, we're talking about. A lamp is a little small thing. So maybe even Rav Meir would agree that an unfired lamp is useless. You can't light a candle in it, it'll fall apart. You can't put liquid into it like as a little shot glass or something and drink it, same reason. The only thing you can do with an unfired Kli Cheres is use it for solids, and a lamp is too small for solids, for anything solid.
What does a lamp look like in the time?
Basically, it looks like a small bowl. Usually they looked like there was a small bowl, and then they had like a little triangular piece sticking out at one end, which you'd put the wick through it. You'd fill up the bowl with oil, you'd put a wick in it and stick it out through the hole, and that would be your lamp. Yeah.
So there were two bowls, one for the oil.
One, a large one for the oil, and a small one for the wick, yeah. The answer is, but over here, what would you be able to use an unfired lamp for? The answer is, you could say, like a bullet bipshiti. You can use an unfired lamp to store coins. So you do have a use for it. So yes, going back to then even... the large hole for the oil, of course it's big enough. So therefore, yes, even Rav Meir might agree, just in this case, just as much as he would say about a bowl or a pot or something, that yes, you do have a use for it even before it's fired, and therefore making the cavity is considered making a keli, and therefore it would be also on Yatsu. Ikadamri, a different version of the discussion, is Amar Rabbi Yosef, that it's not according to Rav Meir, but rather Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddiki. That on Mishnah, where it says that punching a hole in a lump of clay to make a lamp makes it already a keli, that would be according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Adius, il posin means pans, like a pan that you use for frying or whatever. And charonios, the Gemara, we'll say soon, charonios is related. No, it's related actually to the word ear. Because sometimes we find that ches and ayin interchange. We'll have something like that in the next parak as well. So therefore, it's like ironios, which means from small cities. So what are they? We're gonna explain soon. No, they're earthenware. We're gonna explain soon that basically what these are is also klicheres that have not been finished. They've been shaped into a rough shape, but nothing else has been done with them yet. So, those things, tahoris ba'ol ames, they are tahor, now they're made out of earthenware. So again, basically what we're talking about is you take a piece of earthenware, you shape it, roughly speaking, clay. You take a piece of clay, you shape it roughly into the shape of like a plate, which also can be used as a pan or something like that. You haven't yet fully made it into its proper shape of a plate. You haven't made it a little concave as you usually would, and you haven't fired it in the oven yet. But still, some people will already eat off it then. So therefore, tahoris ba'ol ames, they are tahor if they remain tahor if they're in oil with a dead body, because a kli cheres can only become tame if it has an inside, and these don't have an inside. They're a flat piece, or they're a flat
they're
piece.
Completely flat, or they
yeah.
curved a bit.
No, they're completely flat. They're completely flat. However, or tahor or tameis b'masa azov, but they are tame if a zov carries. They're tame if a zov carries them, or for that matter, if they hold the weight of a zov. There's a special kind of tumah of a zav, we talked about this before, called hesed, that if a zav moves something, even without touching it, he's metame.
So if a plate is on a
table, let's say, and he moves the table, right.
Then it becomes
tame. Right. The difference is, Rashi says, because Tumas Hesed does not require it to have an inside. We have, Rashi points out, for example, you have a din, forget about a flat thing like we're talking about over here. Let's say you're talking about a keli. Imagine you have, for example, an earthenware jug, which has a stopper on it. It's completely sealed shut. Such a thing, if it's in an oil mess, stays tar. The Torah says that if it doesn't have a summit seal, if it doesn't have a cover tightly attached to it, then the contents become tummy. But if it does, it stays tar. But if a zav were to move such a thing, it would still become tummy. So we see that by a zav, it doesn't matter whether the inside of it is accessible or even whether it has an inside. So therefore, we're saying that these flat plates then are tar of oil mess, which means masa zav. However, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, I have to heard us from Asa Zav, but Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik says that no, they're even tahor if a zav moves them, Tumas Hesed, l'fishal in nigmar malachton, because the work on them is not finished yet. The base kibble, because they haven't been, because the carving has not made, they haven't been carved to be concave, but once they are, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik would say they're already metameh. Therefore, he would agree with our Mishnah then that says that once the lamp has a receptacle, then already it's metame even though it hasn't been fired yet. Yeah. However, again, Omale Abaya, according to this version, also Abaya objects. Dilma Abkan Lakomar Abelazabeth Tzaddik Kasim Ela Bechazim Kabul Abemidi. Again, you might argue that Abelazabeth Tzaddik there says, as far as this plate, that is the Kabul Tumah because it's suitable, you could still use it to hold something. Once it has a receptacle, once you've made it into the shape of a plate, even though you haven't fired it yet, you could put apples or whatever on it. Aval hachal ma'ichazi, but again, what could you use an unfired lamp for? It's too small. And again, the same answer with kabbalah b'pshiti. You could use it to hold coins. But yes, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik might agree with our Mishnah that a lamp where you just made the hole in it is enough already to be mekabel tumah. Not to be a couple terms. It's enough already to be considered a keli, and therefore that you can't do that on Yom Tov. The Rambam has Tosfos has a different explanation of this Ilpos and Charonius business. Tosfos says we're not talking about something that was made into a flat plate. We're talking about something rather where it was it's a bowl. It has an inside, but it's still it's like those two lamps that I was describing before, how the Rambam says our Mishnah is talking about, similar kind of thing. You have the bowl still has a covering on top. It hasn't been opened completely. Again, some people will still eat off such a bowl. Other people will wait until in big cities where they're more careful about what they use. They will only use dishes that are completely made. They will wait until it's completely made. They'll wait until it actually has a receptacle, till the receptacle is actually available. And then the Mefarshim on the Mishnah in Adius have a similar explanation there, which I believe is based on Pirush Mishnayos Rambam, that the Ilpos and Charonius are something like the lamps of our Mishnah. According to Rambam's explanation, we have they're made two together, and then you cut them apart. You make like a hollow ball and then you cut it in two. Tanan Abanan, speaking of this, in person as a ner, you're not allowed to open up a lamp on Yom Tov, in Oton Ilpos and Choronius for Yom Tov, you're not allowed to make these Ilpos and Choronius on Yom Tov, according to these various definitions. Reb Shimon Gamliel, Matab Ilpos and Choronius. Reb Shimon Ben Elazar says you're allowed to make the Ilpos and Choronius because at that point it's just a flat piece of earthenware. You haven't done anything to it. You haven't made a base cable. You haven't fired it yet, so therefore there should be no issue. My Choronius, what does the word Choronius mean? The ches is like an ayin. Like I said before, sometimes ches and ayin interchange. We find actually there's a Gemara, for example, that mentions that Rav Chia had a speech defect. He wasn't able to pronounce a ches properly, and we're talking about a Sardi style ches from your throat. But he pronounced it more like an ayin. So we see therefore the ches and ayin.
Well, I know he pronounced it.
Because we find the Gemara that mentions it. We'll learn it very soon.
Really?
Yeah. So Charonius is the equivalent of Ironius from the city. My Ironius, what does the word Ironius mean? Amar Abaye Tsoi Chaklaisa. It means plates that are used in small towns. Because again, people in small towns don't care what they use. They don't live in big cities. They're not worried about what their neighbors are going to think about them so much, or that they're using unfinished kalim. So therefore, they'll just use whatever comes to hand. If all that's available right now is a, if all that's available right now is an unfinished plate, then they'll eat an often unfinished plate, as opposed to people in big cities where they would want to use the fancier stuff. Then the Mishnah said, "You know, it's in Techamin that you're not allowed to make charcoal on Yom Tov." Pshita. Well, of course you can't make charcoal. Lamai Chazi. What could you possibly use it for on Yom Tov? Like Rashi said in the Mishnah, the normal thing you use charcoal for is for goldsmithing. Obviously, you're not going to do that on Yom Tov. So why would we think you're allowed to make charcoal on Yom Tov? What purpose would it be for?
Well, I mean,
they didn't normally. Normally, to heat food in those days, they didn't need, because the reason why you would make charcoal in the first place is because you need an extra hot fire.
Right.
To cook food, you don't need that. You need that. You need higher temperatures like that for goldsmithing Tony Nabchia. So Nabchia says it right. So I can tell you another purpose that you could use charcoal for. The Mishnah only has to tell us that you cannot make charcoal where you want it. You would want to give it to a bathhouse attendant that same day. In other words, another purpose they would use charcoal is where they needed to heat a large amount of water, like for a bathhouse. So therefore, you might think that you want to go take a hot bath on Yom Tov in the bathhouse. You're allowed, so therefore you should be allowed to make charcoal for that purpose, to give to the bathhouse attendant so he can heat it up for you. That's what the Mishnah is telling us that you're not.
Because you're not allowed to increase.
Wait, but the question is, the reason is because you're making a keli. You're making something which is not really needed. I mean, you could have made it before Yom Tov. There's no reason you have to make charcoal on Yom Tov.
No.
So if you needed it for Yom Tov, if there was no other way, then fine. You know, we talk about Makshir Echol Nefesh before. But here, where it's only Makshirin, because it's not directly for the bathing, it's only to heat up water for the bathing, and you could have done it before Yom Tov, we said already that you can't do that. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees to that. Besides which, our Mishnah could be according to the Chachamim, who don't allow Makshir Echol Nefesh anyway, on Yom Tov. Anyway, the question is, though, the Gemara asks something different. Who said...
By the way.
What, are you not allowed to make charcoal? Yeah.
No, Makshir Echol Nefesh.
The halacha is you're allowed to make Makshir Echol Nefesh, but only if you couldn't have made them before Yom Tov. That's what we talked about the other day, as far as the spit and as far as the knife. It's actually more like Rabbi Yehuda, but only if you couldn't have done it before Yom Tov. Because even if you could have done it before Yom Tov, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees. But anyway, the Gemara asks, Uboi v'yom mishori, are you telling me then that you're allowed to... You would be allowed to give them to a bathhouse attendant anyway. Why? You can't bathe in hot water on Yom Tov. Even we learned in Shabbos, there was a whole sugya about this, that the Chachamim made a gzera, you're not allowed to bathe in hot water on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. Because there was a situation over there where bathhouse attendants would heat the water on Shabbos or on Yom Tov and claim that it was done before Shabbos. So because of that, they made a gzera that you're not allowed to go to a bathhouse on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. Mikveh is a different thing. Mikveh, up until fairly recent times, were cold anyway. It was out there as chiddush of how to make a mikveh that can actually be heated, that can actually be kept hot on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So bathing in a hot mikveh, that's a different issue. The Acharoni Apostle can discuss it. Basically, what it comes out to is you're doing it for the purpose of going to Tovel, for the purpose of Tosfos Tara, rather than to bathe, and therefore it's allowed. Yeah, I'm aware of it. But if there was reason to be concerned that they're heating it up on Shabbos, then yeah, you'd probably have the same issue, but you don't necessarily. Anyway, so what are you telling me? You might think you're allowed to bring charcoal to the bathhouse so you can bathe on Yom Tov. What do you mean bathing on Yom Tov? The answer is Kida Amar Rava, like Rava said in a different context. Lahazia v'kodim gzera, that we're talking about, that you might have wanted to use it for a shvitzbad. You're not going in there to actually bathe, but you were just going in there to go into the sweat and then into the shvitzbad. V'kodim gzera, and this would be before the gzera, because there were two gzeras in that. There were two stages in that gzera. First, there were gozer on bathing, and later on, there were gozer on even going into a shvitz on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. So therefore, there was a point when you're not allowed to bathe, but you are allowed to be mazia. You are allowed to go in there to sweat, and that's the point. So hachanami, the same thing over here. Lazia v'kodim gzera. Our Mishnah would have to be telling us why you can't make charcoal on Yom Tov, even if you were planning to bring it to a bathhouse, not to bathe, because that's already also from a long time ago. But where you wanted to go to the shvitzbad, even that you're not allowed to make charcoal on Shabbos for that.
Well, that would be.
No, so that's what I'm saying. There were two stages in the Gzeira. Right. First, you weren't allowed to bathe, but you were allowed to shvitz. And later on, you weren't allowed to shvitz either.
Why did they?
Because they saw that people were going into the bathhouse to bathe, and they were claiming we're only going in there to sweat. The Mishnah, the Gemara in Shabbos actually mentions there was a third, at one point there was a third stage they tried to, the Chachamim tried to make also, that you're not even allowed to go to a natural hot springs like the one in Tveria. But eventually they realized that's something that ain't necessarily Cholim Lamed, well, that's not something that people could hack, and therefore they were off that part of the Gzeira, but they kept the other two parts. So you're still not allowed to go to a bathhouse or to a Shvitz on Shabbos. The Mishnah is a different matter, yeah. Yeah. Then the Mishnah said, you're not allowed to cut a wick into two parts. And then we had Rabbi Yehuda said you're allowed to cut it using fire. Why? My shnav is sakin deloy. What do you mean that with a knife you're not allowed to cut it? To become a sakin mana because you're fixing, you're making a keli. Because before you had one wick and now you're making two. Before you had a long one and now you're making it shorter. But we're not making a sakin mana. So what's the difference if you cut it with fire? It's the same thing. Tony Rabchia, so Rabchia says, you're right. What you mean is, what Rabbi Huda means is that you can cut it using fire in two different lamps. Meaning, you have a very long wick, you need two wicks. What you do is put one end of it in each of two lamps, light the middle, and then eventually it breaks apart into two wicks.
Making any big
difference. But it's making it you're not doing it in a way that's obvious that you're making a keli. You're doing it because you want to light candles. It happens. You're using one long wick and two candles, and eventually it's going to break apart. But that's fine. One thing it says in Shulchan Aruch would have to be that you're lighting both candles for a purpose of Yom Tov, not that you're lighting one of them just stamaze, because that's a different matter. You can't light candles just for the fun of it on Yom Tov. You can only light candles when they have a purpose. Another din as far as candles, Amar of Nafan Ba'aba Amar Rav, Moichtin es apsil b'Yom Tov. You are allowed to moichtin a wick on Yom Tov. My moichtin, what does the moichtin mean? Amar of Chanini bar Shlemi, Mishmei Derav, La'aduye Chushcha. It means to take off the blackness. You have the end of the wick, the end of the wick becomes black from the fire, and it interferes with the flame. Nowadays they treat candle wicks with something so that the burnt part eventually falls off by itself. But back in those days they didn't, so it was like, we talked about the other day, it's like the ash at the end of a cigarette where every so often you have to flick it off. Here also, every so often you have to take it off, and therefore you're allowed to do that on Yom Tov. Today, as a practical matter, you don't need to because it falls off on its own. They make candles in such a way that the burnt part eventually falls off on its own, yeah. Having said that, in Shulchan Aruch it says this isn't so simple, actually. You're allowed to do this by flicking it off with your fingers, but you're not allowed to do it by cutting it off with a keli, it says. Put out the candle? No, you do it carefully so as not to put it. The whole point is you're not trying to put out the candle, you're trying to make it burn better. But to use a keli for this purpose would still be like fixing a keli, would still be like fixing a keli as opposed to doing it by hand is fine. This is on Yom Tov, we're talking about Shabbos, you can't.
No,
it is sort of because you need the light. You need light. Having a light on Yom Tov is part of Malachi Tehillim.
You would get like fire, warmth,
and light and heat.
Okay.
Yeah. Tony Bakapara, Vavdvarim Nemar B'Psila. There's six dinim that they said about wicks as far as Yom Tov. Gimel Lahachmir v'Gimel Lahakol. There's three things that you have to be strict about, and three that you can be lenient. Lahachmir is ain goydle noisel achilah b'yom tov. You're not allowed to twist together a wick lachilah on yom tov because you're making a keli.
Like a problem that you don't get.
Sort of, or like a common way they would make wicks in those days. We learned about in Shabbos is you take a piece of cloth and like you twist it into the shape of a wick. And number two, you're not allowed to singe it in fire like you usually do to make it burn easier. Again, because then you're making it into a keli.
Meaning dip it in fire?
No, not dip. Yeah, like you pass it through fire. Nowadays, we have actually when it says in Shulchan Aruch that the husband's job, the woman lights Shabbos, the woman of the house lights Shabbos candles. The husband's job before Shabbos is to prepare them by lighting them and putting them out because then they're easier to light later. That's mahavav inoisa. So you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov. And number three, vein chos chenoitz l'shnayim, and I'll have to cut it into two, like I said in the Mishnah. Lahakol, the three things that are lenient, is memacha b'yad, you can you can squeeze it together by hand, which is more like what you were talking about. Like you have one of those pieces of cotton that you tore off before you unzip, and now you need to roll it between your hands or whatever to make it stronger, so it'll burn more evenly. That you can do because it's already a wick. You're just improving it. Number two, v'shoda v'shemen, you can soak it in oil, so it'll catch on easier. And you can cut it into two by putting the two ends of it into two different lamps, like we said before, where you light it in the middle and eventually it divides. Since we mentioned a din that Rav Nachman bar Abba said in the name of Rav, this moichtenes apfila, by taking off the burnt end of the wick, so now the Gemara mentions another thing that he said. V'amar Rav Nachman bar Abba amar Rav, asirei bovel yodei gehenem heim. The rich people of Bovel are destined to go down to Gehenem. Why, Rashi? What?
I got
the part. Why? Because Rashi says, as the Gemara is going to explain now, they don't have Rachmanus, they don't give tzedakah. Kiha de shabsoi ba marinus, like the
Syrian.
Yeah, the rich people, yeah. I mean, we're not talking about a blanket statement, obviously, but in general.
Like
no, but I'm saying, in other words, it's not like every single Ashir, obviously there were exceptions, but we're talking about there are certain Ashirim in Bovel, yeah. Asira is Ashira, yeah. A lot of times a shin in Hebrew is like a top in Aramaic, yeah.
And also it's going out to the fact that it's more common among Ashirim than other...
Well, obviously, yeah. Kihod the Shabsoi Bamarinus, like you have the case of Shabsoi Bamarinus, that was his name, Ikwal Bovel, he one time came to Bovel, but Ominayo Iska, he asked the rich people over there to help him get a job, Voloyavale, and they didn't give him. Mizoini, he asked them for food, Mezanami, Loizanu, they didn't want to give him food either. Omar, so he said, you know what? Hani me'er of Rav calls to. These guys must be descended from the Eir of Rav. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, V'nasam l'chol rachamim v'richamcha, the Eivishter, the Pasuk says, will give you rachamim, and he will have rachmanas on you. Which means that he will give you rachamim means that you will have rachmanas on other people, and then v'richamcha, and he will have rachmanas on you. And Rashi adds also, the end of the Pasuk is, kashen nishba la v'secha, as Hashem promised your fathers, implying that somebody who doesn't have rachmanas shows that he's not descended from the others.
Who is this person?
The Shabsoi Bamarunas? I don't know anything else about him, but apparently he was somebody, you know. Yeah. So therefore, Kolam Racham Alabrias Biadur Shum Mizar Shal Avraham. If you know anybody who has Rachmanos on other people, then you know he's from the descendants of Avraham. But Chol Mishenim Racham Alabrias Biadur Shenim Mizar Shal Avraham. If you know somebody who does not have Rachmanos, we know that he's not. We know the Jewish people are Rachmanim by Shanim Begoyim Lachzadim. The Gemara mentions in Yuvamas the famous thing about the Nesinim, the Gevoinim, that they didn't have Rachmanos either, and they weren't descended, and they're not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. So Shabshoi Bamarinus is saying these people also have no Rachmanos, same thing.
That
the Rosh Hashiva is a word, Geber. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which? Three words. Goyim Lech Sadim. Yeah, it stands for Geber.
I'm
sorry. Yeah, so it's just because Geber is one of the words in Hebrew for a person. Specifically in Hayom Yom, it talks about the idea that a Geber is somebody who shows that he has control over his Yetzirah, over his Nefesh HaBahamis. So, yeah. Another thing, Va'amar of Nathan Ba'aba Amar Rav, Kolam et Sapa al Shochan Acherim, somebody who has to wait for other people, for somebody else's table, meaning that he doesn't have a place to eat on his own and he has to wait for other people to invite him, Olam Choshech Ba'adai, the world is dark in front of him. Shanema, as the Pasuk says, Noided Hula Lechem Ayeh, if the person is wandering around looking where there's bread, Yoda, he knows, Kinochen B'yoda Yem Choshech, that there's ready to hand for him a day of darkness. So we see that having to wait on somebody else to give you food is like being in darkness. Rav Chista, Amav Chayev, Einem Chayim. Rav Chista says even further than that, such a person's life is no life. The Yom Choshech means like a day of death. Yeah, there's no life. There's darkness, but meaning the darkness of death. What's the idea? There's a couple of different mafarshim on it. One of them is when you have to wait for somebody else to invite you, then it means. Basically, it means you're wasting a lot of time. You have to come early. You have to come on time to their house. You can't be late for the meal because it would be offending them. You can't leave immediately the meal is over. So you're wasting a lot of time. So in that sense, like your life is not really a life because you're wasting a lot of time that you could have been accomplishing important things.
Dependent on you.
Oh, so the dependence is the other thing, right? What did Marsha say on it? He said that there's another idea also. We learned in Yoma that when a person can't see what they're eating, then it's a kind of inui, it's a kind of affliction. That's why we said, for example, Jewish people complained about the mung because it didn't look like everything they wanted. We learned over there. So therefore, somebody who has to wait for other people to supply him with food, he doesn't see his food. He doesn't see the supply of food that he has all the time. So therefore, his world is kosher for him. Well, I mean, one reason why the Gemara may be mentioning that is to tell us, make sure then don't leave a person in such a situation that he has to be mitzapa al shochan acharim. Adrabah, instead of that he has to wait for you to invite him, you lachatchila invite him. That's not mitzapa al shochan acharim. That's adrabah. You're giving him covered by inviting him.
Pilate told me when he was taken by German, this was the only thing he thought about on its
yeah.
Day,
sure.
Day.
Yep. Tana Rabbanan, Gimu Chayein Einim Chayim. There are three people whose life is not really life. The Elohein, they are as follows. Number one, I'm a tzapel shochan chaver, somebody who has to wait for somebody else's table. Like we just said, he has to wait for somebody to invite him. Number two, Mishi Ishim Eshalosalov, someone whose wife dominates him. And number three, Mishi Yisurin Moshlan Regufo, somebody who Yisurin, whose suffering controls his body, dominates over his body. Which Marsha says that the reason why we're saying this word moshel means yisurim in and of themselves are not a bad thing. We at the very beginning of brachos, the Gemara talks about the idea also in Bava Metzia that yisurim can be a very good thing. But yisurim that are a good thing are where they don't interfere with the person's Torah of avoda. So that's not they control him. That's he controls the yisurim. But where the yisurim or his wife controls him and prevents him from doing what he's supposed to do, that's the chayei menu chayim.
Learning Torah.
Yeah, learning Torah, doing mitzvahs, davening, b'kavana, etc. In Pesachim, we learned there was a different list. The Gemara had mentioned in Pesachim of chayei menim chayim, people who get upset too easily, people who are too delicate. What's the difference? Tosfos says the difference there is there the Gemara is talking about things that are traits that are inborn in a person. Here we're talking about things that develop later in life. The yesh aymim and
other change them.
Yeah, you can change the ones that are in Sakhim also, sure, but it's a lot harder to. The yesh aymim and others say there's a fourth case of chayei menim chayim. Afni she'en le'el cholok achod, also somebody who only has one shirt, because then he can never change it, so it gets full of lice, and that bothers him. But Tanakama, what does the Tanakama answer to that? Why doesn't he list that? Because he says efshe d'ba'ayin b'manei. He can still check his clothing. Okay, true, he doesn't have another shirt to change into, another undershirt to change into, but he can always pick off the lice from it, so that's not chayei menim chayim.
The anguish of knowing
yeah, that's probably why the Yeshayim say that. Yeah. Mishnah says more about making or fixing kelim on yomtiv. Ein shoyven and tzacheres ve'ein choschen and a yor. You're not allowed to break a piece of earthenware or cut a piece of paper. Litzlois by maliach to roast a salted fish on it. The idea is you're putting the fish on a grill, but if you don't put something under the fish, it's going to burn wherever it touches the grill. So therefore, you put a piece of earthenware or a piece of paper underneath it to absorb the heat. But you can't do that. You can't break those on Yom Tov because again, you're making it into a useful keli for that purpose.
By breaking
a piece of earthenware, you're making it into a functional thing that you can use to roast the fish. In the Alter Rebbe, by the way, discusses in Shulchan Aruch a question, which is also negayah to what we were talking about yesterday, as far as cutting and ripping ropes. Why don't we have a different issue? Isn't there a malacha of kodeah, ripping over here? And the answer is Alter Rebbe says ripping only applies when you have more than one thing attached together, like ripping a piece of cloth which is made out of many fibers,
a
piece of paper,
also.
A rope. Well, no, but you're ripping. No, we were talking about untwisting it. Korea would be no. So untwisting it is a different thing. That's different malacha. That's soiser. But ripping the rope if it's thin enough to rip. The rope itself is basically one thing. That wasn't an issue of Kodea. Similarly, over here also, the piece of paper is one solid thing. So therefore, it's not an issue of Kodea, but there is this issue of making a keli. The in Gerfen Tana V'Kiraim, another din, you're not allowed to sweep out an oven or stove. If you have, for example, some of the plaster fell into it, then again, it would be fixing a keli to take it out. You don't need to because you could still cook and bake with it in there. Avam Machabshin, but you can press it down so it's not making a big pile at the bottom of the stove. You can press it down so it doesn't touch the food and burn it. The in Makifin Shtei Chobius Lishpas Aleinu Sakdera. You're also not allowed to put together two barrels in order to put you'll put two barrels next to each other with a space between them. You'll build a fire in between them and you'll put a pot on top. You can't do that because that amounts to making an oil. That amounts to making
two barrels
and a pot on top, then it's like making an oil. It's like making it's like making a structure. We'll talk about that in the Gemara.
The picture over here.
You can imagine what it looks like, yeah. The ain't some kind of sakdirna babakas. You're not allowed to hold up a pot, like if you have a pot that's dented and doesn't stand straight without putting something underneath it, you can't put a piece of wood under the side of it. The Gemara will talk about that tomorrow. The reason is because the Tana of our Mishnah holds that wood is only meant on Yom Tov for burning, for no other purpose. So therefore it's muktzeh for any other purpose other than the purpose of burning.
And our Tana Benis doesn't, even if it's not for its extended.
Right. No, because it's not for its intended, because a piece of wood is only designed to be used for its intended purpose.
Which
right. V'chein badelas, and the same thing with a door. Which it sounds like it means you're not allowed to hold up a pot with a door, which obviously nobody does. So we'll talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow. It doesn't mean to hold up a pot with a door. It means you can't hold up a door with a piece of wood.
No,
to put it like a piece of wood is like a doorstop or something. Yeah. The ein man hignas abehem. Right. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. We'll talk about it more tomorrow, Bez Hashem. The ein man hignas abehem makal b'yomtiv. You're not allowed to lead an animal with a stick on yomtiv. And again, the assumption at this point is that it's because of the same thing, because you can't use wood for any other purpose. But again, the Gemara will deal with that tomorrow. V'rabbala zereb Shimon makal v'rabbala zereb Shimon says that's motiv. What, leading an animal with a stick?
Yeah.
No. In Shabbos, we had about that an animal can rear various kinds of deer that's needed to protect it or whatever, but obviously you can't carry a stick and it doesn't happen on Shabbos.
That's things that we used to.
Anyway, so going through one thing at a time, the first thing we had was about the earthenware or the paper to roast the fish. My timer, why can't you do that? Mishum to come a sack of mana, because you're making a keli, because you make a useful thing in order to roast the fish. We said the end go from town of a kidayim, you can't sweep out the oven or the stove. Tony Rabchia by Yosef Kamed Rab Nachman, so Rabchia by Yosef Torah Braisa in front of Rab Nachman, that there is an exception. If you cannot bake in the oven unless you sweep it out, then it's mutter, because then it would be a matter of Echol Nefesh, or Machshira Echol Nefesh, rather. Again, our Tana could be going according to the Tana Kamu, who says that Machshira Echol Nefesh are always not allowed, but with the halachas like a Behuda, that they're allowed, so therefore you're allowed to.
It would be preparing the oven?
No, that's the thing. We're talking about on Yom Tov, some of this plaster or whatever fell in.
Right.
There's such a big pile of it in the oven that you can't put anything. In those times, remember, they put things into the oven by sticking them to the walls. So if there's only a small amount of the stuff at the bottom of the oven, that doesn't interfere with you baking anything. But if you have a substantial amount of it, then it's going to get in the way. Yeah. In Shulchan Aruch, it talks about that. All kinds of ovens that we have nowadays, where you put things on the floor of the oven or on a rack or whatever, is a whole different thing. Even a very small amount of that stuff in the oven will interfere.
The ovens were round, and you used to stick them on the wall?
The ovens were shaped like this, like an upside-down cup without a top. Like, yeah. They'd stick the bread, for example, over here. That's why it was kept. Stick it on and take it off very carefully to prevent it from falling off. But
where they stick it?
With a trowel or whatever, I don't know.
They push it against the wall.
Yeah, I guess so. But so therefore, if you have a big pile of stuff inside the oven, then you can't do it. So some examples, the Gemara says, Zveis d'Reb Chiya nafal ha'aricha b'tanura b'yemetava. Reb Chiya's wife, at one time happened that a brick fell out of the oven, and then a brick fell out of the wall of the oven and fell onto the bottom of the oven on Yom Tov. Amal Rav Chiya, so Rav Chiya tells her, Chazi da'ano rifte ma'aliyah va'ina. You should know that I want good quality bread. Which is an indirect way of saying, get the thing out of here because otherwise it'll cause the bread to burn when you bake it. No, that's why, because he's saying, if you can't bake.
Hello?
Effectively what he's saying is that if you don't remove that brick, it's going to interfere with baking. A similar example, Amale Rava Lashame, Rava one time told his servant, his attendant, Tovi li bar avza, roast for me a bar avza actually means a duck, Hagoyt Habach changes it to avza, which means a goose, ve'izdar mecharucha, and be careful that it doesn't get singed, which amounts to the same thing. In other words, make sure there's nothing at the bottom of the oven that'll touch it and burn it. Same thing, in other words, sweep out the oven first. Speaking of ovens, Amale Ravina Lravashi, Ravina asked Rav Ashi, Amalon Rav Acha Mehutzel, Rav Acha Mehutzel told me, Demar, that the master, meaning you, Shaukin Le Tanura B'yemetava, they smear the opening of the oven with clay to seal it up on Yom Tov. Now, so that's that the reason why they would do it is when you put something, you put, for example, like a roast or something that's going to take a substantial amount of time to cook in the oven, you don't want all the heat to dissipate.
Right.
So therefore, you would cover it up. You'd mix up some clay and apply it to the top over there to seal it. The question is, how are you allowed to knead clay on Yom Tov? Amalei. So Rav Ashi tells him, you don't need to knead anything. Anan araksa de pras tamchinan. We can rely on the river pros is right. The bank of the river pros is right here. The banks of the river have plenty of mud, so we don't need to knead any mud. There's mud ready made over there at the side of the river. The animili who decided masmo. However, that only applies if you actually made a simen. And Rashi adds that Rashi says you need two things: you need to make a simen in it, and you need to actually move it to a different side. Like you take from the riverbank, you take a cup of it and move it off to the side.
And then you can use it
on Yom Tov because you don't need to knead it anymore. It's already pre-kneaded by the river. No, that's a different thing, so they don't blow away. Here the reason is because otherwise it's mukta. Amar Ravina v'kit mashari. Ravina says, here's another thing. You can also use ashes. What does that mean? Rashi says it means you can actually mix ashes with water and knead them together and use that to seal off the stove, the oven. Why? Because ashes can't really be mixed that effectively with water. They don't really make a solid mass, and therefore it's allowed. Tosfos argues with that. Tosfos says that what the Gemara means over here is two possibilities. One is it means you're allowed to use dry ashes. You can't mix them with water. Tosfos brings, based on a different Gemara, that mixing ashes with water is an issue of Megabel. But you're allowed to apply them dry.
So you put the ashes with earth? Or what?
No, so according to this, it would just be that you use ashes, you stick them into the crevices around the oven to seal it up. The other possibility, Tosfos says, is it means that if you needed ashes with water before Yom Tov, then you were allowed to apply it to the oven on Yom Tov. Pnei Yeshua and some other achronim discuss the issue. Maybe there might be a difference between technically you're allowed to do losh, you're allowed to do kneading on Yom Tov, so therefore, by that extension, you should be allowed to do this gibel as well. And they distinguish between losh, which is directly melacha sefer nefesh, whereas this is only machshira erchol nefesh, etc. Yeah. Then the Mishnah said, "Ve'en makifin shtei chavias," that you can't put together two barrels and put a pot on top of them. So a related din, Amar of Nachman, avonim shal beis hakisei, stones of a beis hakisei, of a latrine, mutar l'tzadon b'yom tov. You're allowed to set them up on Yom Tov. The idea is what
on
you would
barrels?
Do. No, not on barrels. This is a different thing. Oh. We're talking about in those days they didn't have toilets. What you would do is if you had to go to the bathroom in a field or something, you would take a bunch of stones. You'd set them up as like a large round area, and then you'd sit on it. You'd sit on top of that. So that you're allowed to make on Yom Tov. That you're allowed to set that up on Yom Tov. We're saying, Rav asked Rav Nachman, what do you mean? Ein makifin shtei chavias lishbet alei mesakdera. Our Mishnah says you're not allowed to put together two barrels and put a pot on top of them. B'pash, just because it's a matter of binyan. So they're also. It's not a matter of different purpose, but it seems he's arguing you're making a binyan, you're making a structure. Amalei. So Rav Nachman tells him, no problem. Shiny halsim mishum to kavod Allah. The difference is with the barrels and the pot. It's not because you're making a structure. It's because you're making something that has an oil. You're making something that has a roof. Here, there's no oil. You sitting on it does not constitute an oil.
But it does answer the question.
You're making a binyan. But that's so. Wait. Amalei Rav Zut Rabashi. So Rav Zut Rabashi. Elamai after. Well, then by that logic, if you're telling me the only kind of binyan that's also on Yom Tov is one that has a roof. So you're telling me if somebody built a shelf, like a ledge rather, on Yom Tov, a person took stones and actually built a ledge out of them, you would say it's mutter. You're not making an oil. Hokanami to Sharia, you're telling me it's mutter.
Right, exactly.
So he answers him, the difference is Hasan binyan keva osa Torah. The Torah asks you on Yom Tov to make a permanent structure. Binyan arai lo osa Torah. The Torah does not prohibit you from making a temporary structure on Yom Tov. However, the Gazur Rabbanan al binyan arai mishum binyan keva. The Rabbanan made a gzera that you're not allowed to make a temporary structure because you might come to make a permanent one. V'hacham mishum kvoide. But here, because the person's covered, then he needs a place to go to the bathroom. Like Gazur be Rabbanan, the Chum did not make a gzera. Which means, in other words, so far we have as follows: that if you're going to build a ledge, that's a binyan keva, then there's no question that's also binyan Torah. If you're putting together something that contains an oil, that's also midrabanan, like the two, even if it's temporary, so the two barrels and the pot on top. But if you're setting it, if it's temporary, and if it's temporary and it does not have an oil, then the chachamim were not, and it's needed for covered up riyas, then the chachamim allowed it.
Only for covered up riyas?
Well, we're saying mishum kavoda, like those are rabbanon, yeah. Some similar dinim as far as making an oil. High medurta, when it comes to making a bonfire, where usually, you know, you set up a structure made out of logs. Milamaila lamata shori, you're allowed to make it from the top down. So you start by holding up in place the top logs, then you build underneath it, you stick in logs underneath that and underneath that. You have a bunch of people helping and all holding it in the air until it's finished. Because that's not a usual way of making a binyan. Milamaya from the Mila also, but to do it from the bottom up is also, because that's the usual way of making a binyan. The chain bay also, the same thing when it comes to eggs. Rashi says we're talking about when you have, for example, when you're putting eggs on top of a, when you're putting eggs on top of a tripod or on top of a grill or something, same idea. You put the eggs first and then you put the structure underneath them to hold it up. Rabbi Hanan explains differently that what we're talking about is you're setting up eggs in a stack. You're making this a similar thing like we described in the Mishnah with the barrels and the pot. You do the same thing. You put two eggs on the side and one on top, and you make a little fire in the middle. Same idea though. You're making a structure. So you put the top egg in, and then you put in the bottom egg underneath it. Then it's okay. V'chein k'deira, the same thing, a pot, like we said in the Mishnah. V'chein puria, the same thing when it comes to setting up a bed. Same idea. You put the top of the bed up first, and then you put up the legs. V'chein chavisa. V'chein chavisa, and the same thing when it comes to setting up barrels. When you're putting up barrels in a storehouse, same idea. Put the top one in place first, and then put in the bottom ones underneath. Tosfos points out that actually all the cases we're talking about over here have to be that there is not only an oil, but there's also wool. For example, the bed toaster says it wouldn't just be, if it was a bed that just had legs, like our beds, there wouldn't be an issue. The issue is only when you have that it actually has walls that reach to the ground or close to the ground. Same thing as with the barrels and the rest of the things. Then it would be an issue. That's what we're talking about over here. As opposed to if it was just, for example, a bed that has four legs in the four corners, toaster says that wouldn't be an issue.
You consider two barrels?
Yeah, because it's two walls. Yes, it's two walls.
It is two walls.
Yes.